Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! In a minute past the hour on this, the 16th of May, 2013. This is The Horn. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home where you can go and click Listen Live to most easily hear the program, although you can also get it on a wide variety of platforms, places like Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices. Great little apps for your smartphones and Android devices and whatnot. Things like TuneIn Radio, where we are well received, and Stitcher.com, where we are also well received. The podcast address is at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Head On with Bob Kincaid. And of course, you can always get the podcast at iTunes. No, really, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and well, there's no getting around the fact that we've got a lot of material to work with tonight. And by the way, also at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, you will find the PayPal button, whereat one goes, or one can also click the Contribute tab and go there to find the traditional mail address, the Overland mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. Which one, and either way is fine, but that's how we keep this program going, and that's how we keep the lights on. We had something of an amazing turn of events last night. We were in a big hole, and a gathering of you all dug us out of the hole, got us a little bit to the good, so that we could start getting out of the hole that we dug in April. And now we find ourselves on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, merely needing to raise the usual evening's $150. That's really not so bad compared to $340 or something like that. Now, is it? 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25. Oh, I can't go any further. You know me and math. But it's all there if you want to help us keep this little effort going. Chat room filling up. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, 4 of 9. Thanks for being there, Sparky. Sparky, one of our chat room moderators. Jump right in if you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. It's free. It's easy. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. Quite fun, really. No, I said we've got a lot to work with tonight, and truly we do. Let's see, how did it go on the game show? Wait a minute. The password is asparagus. You will get to that. That's just too damn funny. We've had some conversation off and on over the past couple of weeks about this armed and dangerous clown, Adam Kokesh, who wants to lead an armed march on the nation's capital. The last time we had to worry about that, nitwits doing so were wearing butternut or gray, and we're all in favor of keeping slaves. He's passed the 4,000 mark of people signed up to do his little armed invasion of Washington, D.C., and frankly, I wouldn't know him from Adam's house cat if I saw him on the street. except in Washington, D.C., anybody who's not law enforcement and is carrying a dangerous weapon, well, you get the idea. But there's been some skepticism as to exactly what his intentions are, this Adam Kokesh. But I found out a little bit about him and about the people who listened to him. Do you doubt for 1 minute that anybody using exactly, Mr. Gibson, the Million Goober March is coming to your town? Do you have any doubt that in the chat room or on this program, I would bounce the hell out of anybody using a racial epithet as a hate word? Because I got one here. Let's see. And it doesn't really matter what the topic is, although in this case it's all about how the government's going to destroy Bitcoin and the government's going to, steal all our, take our guns away, and that one, and the mad paranoid ramblings of the libertarian right. Don't worry, I'm not going to subject you to the audio. But just to give you an idea of the kind of person who signs up for the Million Goober March, a quote from one of his followers, an asshat whose nickname is Tubefish, that's T-O-O-B-P-H-I-S-H, who in commenting on the YouTube video from this guy's radio psychosis, internet psychosis, responded, and this is a direct quote, "Where's old Joe these days? Where's old Joe these days? He's probably just Biden," with quotation marks around it, "his time to see if somebody be going to trigger the nigga." These are the guys who want to march for their freedom with loaded semi-automatic rifles into Washington, D.C. But don't worry, it's not just dark-skinned folks. Somewhere up comment, you get, "Adam is right. Stop paying your slave wage taxes and the IRS will fall overnight." Yeah, okay. And then DrSmith963 offering up a trenchant piece of right-wing wisdom. "I heard they just slammed Bitcoin down again yesterday. The Jewish bankers did." Meet the new fascists, same as the old fascists. You guys gonna wear your sheets and pillowcases? How does that work with a sling for a semi-automatic assault rifle? Now, I do have some audio for you. But just in case you were wondering what the essential character was of the alleged characters who intend to be taking up arms and marching on Washington, D.C., that's them. They're all about the Jew bankers and using, you know, that word. I apologize even for the use of the word. But if there is any value whatsoever to the internet, it lies in the fact that we don't have to wet our pants at the thought of offending the FCC. This is a grown-up program for grown-ups, and, well, I'm sorry, I should have given you the little Timmy, little Cindy warning, but please tell them never to use that word. That it is nothing more than, it's like a genetic marker for "to stupid." But that's what you get. Now these are Ron Paul fans, by the way. Adam Kokesh had a really, really sweet gig with RT. Until he just had to, I mean, it was like a compulsion, just had to endorse Ron Paul in 2012. Oh, I'm glad you like that, Mr. Gibson. Genetic marker for stupid. Nice one, Bob. Actually, it's for te-stupid. We spell that, Mr. Gibson, capital T, little E, little H, capital S-T-O-O-P-I-D, te-stupid. There's your freedom cherishing First Amendment, Second Amendment protecting freedom, Benghazi! Yeah. Very true, Stockton Larry. You say Kokesh, I say Koresh. And what comes after it? Let's call the whole thing off. Right? Yeah. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. I have happy news. Tonight's fundraising is done. No, really. It took 12 minutes. It took 10, really. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Janie. Now, if we would like to continue digging out of the end of April hole, we can do that. And we might actually go into the weekend tomorrow ahead of the game. Thank you very, very much. This is how this continues to work. And on behalf of people who would like to contribute but cannot, let me thank all of you who keep all of this going. Because sometimes people can and sometimes people can't. But we have a little family here, a little commune. And we all take care of each other. And keep this thing available. We don't charge for podcasts. We don't charge for access to the stream. This is simply an exercise in good faith. An exercise in community values. And you guys make it happen. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Koresh or Kokesh or Cokehead or Cokeass. No, they have still not heard from the FBI or others. No, even with threats to the president and conspiracy of the same going on. No, they haven't. Not to my knowledge. Because we're dealing with armed lunatics here, and if the Secret Service was to go to them and say, boys, you know, you really might not want it. Well, that'd just make them sure that their freedom was being taken away by that one! And that they, sure as God made little green apples, really had to the gun up and march on Washington, D.C. Yeah. No, we got fun stuff to work with now that that's over with. I couldn't find the YouTube, don't ask me. I couldn't find the YouTube clip if I had to. I don't want to. That's merely an example of what we're dealing with. Expanding on something that Mark mentioned last night, Jim emails and says, the District of Columbia area is also under the control of the Military District of Washington, as well as the United States Air Force, signed Jim. It could get interesting. Maybe I can convince Agnes to let us go to Washington. How often do you get a chance to go to Washington, D.C. for the 4th of July? I don't know. She seems pretty stern in her conviction that we not be there. Yeah, oh well. Killjoy. Actually, she's trying to avoid that. No, like I said, the password is asparagus. Jerry Stiller will go first. No. You know by now what I'm talking about. You've probably already seen it, but please don't deprive me of the right or the ability to run this clip. It's actually 9 minutes long, and the whole thing's just precious. Now, we all know that Eric Holder leaves a little to be desired in the Attorney General and Department. And I guess between yesterday and today, yesterday was probably fun. Sparring with Louis Gohmert must be feel a little bit like being the cobra with the beady-eyed little mouse in the corner of the cage. The beady-eyed little mouse being beady-eyed Louis Gohmert. So they had this contentious exchange yesterday in the House Judiciary Committee, in which Louis Gohmert, and by the way, I couldn't resist. I had to look up his bio. Now this guy is dumber than a handful of hammer handles. And yet, oddly enough, do you know he was the president of his class, and they actually gave him a degree in, and I dare not tell Dr. Bill this, they gave him a degree at Texas A&M in history. And then somebody let him into law school. And then somebody put him on the bench. He was a judge in Texas. At one point in time, he actually told a person who was HIV positive that that as a condition of probation, he would have to disclose his HIV status in any relationship. Not kidding. The guy was convicted not of a sex crime or any sort of crime of violence involving sexual conduct. The man was not convicted of assault or battery or robbery or none of that. Guy was convicted of stealing a car. And Louis Gohmert, from the bench of the criminal trial court of some godforsaken little county in Texas, required the man, as a condition of probation, to seek written consent from all future sexual partners on a form that the court provided that notified them of his HIV status. After engaging in that bit of judicial overreach. Funny how the right wing's always the ones that are upset about judicial activism. He was rewarded by Governor Rick Perry with a seat, and I am not kidding here, on the Texas Supreme Court. No, I'm sorry, he was Chief Justice of Texas's 12th Court of Appeals. And he sat on the bench there from 2002 to 2003 for about 6 months. That's when the First District of Texas opened up, because it had been gerrymandered out of all recognizability into a Republican stronghold that included Louis's home in Tyler, Texas. And he won. In 2012, he garnered 71% of the vote in the First District of Texas, which, as I've frequently noted, tells us a real boatload, not so much about Louis Gohmert, but about the occupants, residents, domiciles of the First District of Texas, who at this moment in time are probably all collectively picking their teeth with their toenail shards, even as we speak. You know, being baffled by wheelbarrows, flummoxed by shoestrings. And yet, oddly enough, allowed to vote. You know, we've featured Looney Louie on any number of occasions because he's nuts. But really, today, I mean, you ever watch the Caine Mutiny? Humphrey Bogart, Fred McMurray, Van Johnson. It was Van Johnson, wasn't it? And Humphrey Bogart eventually going around the bend. You know, sitting there working those steel balls over and over in his hand, and they thought I was crazy, but I caught him with the strawberries. Yeah, I know my Bogart leaves something, but I've been working on it for you. I love Bogart. Well, that's kind of the day that Louie had yesterday. Now, Bob Goodlatte, a Republican from Virginia, is chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. We should not, and they put him on there because, hey, look, Louie's been a judge. Golly, let's put him on the Judiciary Committee. Bob Goodlatte is the chair. And Bob Goodlatte spent 9 minutes, it's a 9-minute clip, telling Louie to suspend, to stand down, because he was going on and on haranguing the Attorney General of the United States about why it is, really, about why it is that he ain't received no box of documents about them Muslims in Texas what was busted for terrorizing jihadi plots, and how it is that he can't have the documents. And how it is that poor old Franklin Graham is subjected to more FBI scrutiny than jihadi Muslims. All of which only exists inside the thin gray settlings betwixt Louie Gohmert's ears that pass for brains. That was an interesting exchange. The Attorney General said, well, Congressman, you wrote us a letter asking for that, and we said we'd be happy to give it to you, and, well, you didn't come get them. You didn't follow up. So that was that moment. It, like I said, this went on for this whole clip runs for 9 minutes. But it reaches its either apex or nadir, depending on how you view the situation. With Louie, I don't know, getting so wrought that he looks like he's getting ready to just step down from the dais and go and slap Eric Holder with a glove and demand that he meet him on the field of honor tomorrow morning at dawn. I don't know, maybe that, you know, a choice of weapons would maybe be what, swimming pool noodles? Which brings us to this.
Attorney General made statements that what I said was not true, when actually the reverse is what happened. I asked the Attorney General what was asked. This is my point of personal privilege, and then the gentleman will respond.
No, it's not a point of personal privilege.
Yes, it is. So when you attack somebody...
Is this the part where I play the Monty Python argument sketch? Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. Now, that's not an argument. That's simply gainsaying. No, it isn't. It's personal privilege. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. Welcome to your Congress. And really, First District of Texas, thank you. Thank you. Undying thanks for sending this fecal-brained jackass to the Congress for us to enjoy. If only he were in the minority, we could just trot him out when we were bored. But this man sits on the Judiciary Committee as a member of the majority, and even his own chairman has to stand him down.
Body's integrity, and say they made statements that were not true.
Now, what?
when you attack somebody's integrity.
Because, you know, that's what Eric Holder did. He attacked him. You know, I don't know, hollering some sort of funny fur in words, and, you know, just come at him and attack him.
And say they made statements that were not true, then of course that raises a point of personal privilege. But the Attorney General failed to answer my questions about what was
after
Bud.
He went back in his regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that's Bob Goodlatte, who is not exactly someone that you would call an Attorney General friendly Republican committee chair. Who's not somebody you would call sane? No. And even he, the gentleman will suspend. The gentleman will suspend. The sergeant at arms will get a blowgun and put a Thorazine dart in this jackanapes neck. I keep interrupting. I'm so sorry.
Then, of course, that raises a point of personal privilege. But the Attorney General failed to answer my questions about what was
after
Bud.
He went back in.
Now, it's noisy, so you got to pay real close attention if you want to get the punchline.
It's regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Aspersions on my asparagus.
What? At which point, nobody really knew what to say anymore. Don't believe your own lion ears, do you?
This is a point of personal privilege, but the Attorney General failed to answer my questions about what was
after Bud. He went back in his regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Aspersions on my asparagus.
You really heard that. I really heard that. It's not a mass hallucination. Louis Gohmert, proud representative of the 1st District of Texas, representing God knows how many countless hundreds of thousands of people who are baffled by shoelaces, accused the Attorney General of the United States. I can scarcely believe I'm saying this. Of, and I quote, casting aspersions on my asparagus. Where in the sweet name of F me running does that come from? Now, he's got a laptop open, and we know that congressmen are notorious for occasionally spending entire hearings playing solitaire or minefield or, you know, mahjong. I don't think Louis's up to mahjong. I don't know if he's up to... I know he's damn sure not up to spider solitaire. But I'm wondering if, in the course of this hearing, one of his... Tyler, Texas. I don't know, maybe one of his former Kilgore Rangerette staffer interns. Representative Louie, what do you want for lunch? We's all going to go down to the cafeteria in Longworth and bring you back at to go lunch because you've been so busy protecting us from that there Attorney General. Do you? Okay, we'll get you the roast beef and the gravy, the open faced one on the white bread. We know you like the white bread, Louie. We'll get you the open faced roast beef sandwich with the mashed taters, but you get two sides. Do you want the collard greens? You want the little baby stewed asparagus. And I'm being charitable here. The password is asparagus. What? He's been transformed to Louis Gromit in the chat room. Hmm. just got this vision of the entire first district, the entire Republican voting bloc, 71% of the voters of the first district of Texas, staring in stunned amazement at a banana. How do you open this thing? They're certainly not ready for the pineapple masterclass. Coconuts are right out. Asparagus. Casting aspersions on my asparagus. Obviously the word, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but the word he was looking for was character. Casting aspersions on my character. How do you go from character to asparagus? What's he got? Vegetable Tourette's? You are seriously getting on my prunes, Mr. Attorney General. And we'll hold you in apricot of Congress. This is not a broccoli matter. Yeah, you've all heard it, Marty telling me. Nicole and Giuliano Forlano were having a load of fun with it this morning. How can you not? This isn't even low-hanging fruit. This is low-hanging asparagus. And asparagus doesn't even hang. This is straight out of Mark Twain. Of course I said don't pick the pumpkins from the bush too early, you turnip! No, this isn't Daryl Issa, Jim. This is Louis Gohmert. The password is asparagus. Man, that's you know what? That's 200 proof stupid. Which takes me back to him being like class president and platoon, squad, brigadoon, leader at Texas A&M. Jim, on the subject line, games, I think half of them are on the toilet playing battleships, as in Harold and Kumar Look for White Castle. Erwin! Over on Facebook, Michael posting, cast aspersions on my asparagus at extreme risk to your horse. Absolutely. Little backgrounder for you in case you were wondering. Sergi, otherwise known as Sergi, Bubba just went boom. Evening, Bob. Subject line, Texas's first congressional district. The first district of Texas, containing the cities of Tyler, Marshall, Longview, and Lufkin, and their vicinities, is behind what I and several people that I know of call the land behind the meth curtain. Why? Because occasionally over there, you can hear, several times a month, meth lab trailers blowing sky high. I am not kidding. And that is all that anyone needs to know about what caliber... Nice choice of words, Sergi. Of people live there, and why Mr. Gohmert is their representative. I admit a sense of morbid curiosity. I want to go there. I want to go there. Apparently, Louis actually lives in Tyler. Because he's a church-going man. He's a deacon, and he even teaches Sunday school. Like I said, out of a sense of morbid curiosity, I want to go visit him. It'd be better than the zoo, and the amusement park and the circus and the rodeo, all rolled up together. Just walking down the streets of Tyler and hearing woohoo, woohoo, woohoo. But no, he goes to church in Tyler. He attends, and those of you who are fond of old TV shows, especially the screwball madcap comic variety, will take great joy in this. Louis attends the, really, Green Acres Baptist Church. Mr. Douglas? Really? I wish I was lying.
Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay.
Asparagus.
I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
All I can figure is, I don't know, maybe he's the Ziffle they don't talk about, seeing how Arnold was so smart. Green Acres Baptist Church. Yeah, oh, well. My asparagus. I mean, I remember when Weird Al Yankovic turned the Knacks' My Sharona into My Bologna. What do we do with asparagus? Now, I know there's not another word in the English language that rhymes with orange. Does anything rhyme with asparagus? Unbearable to us? That's an approximate rhyme, I think. Benedict telling me, no, you don't want to tour Tyler or the First District of Texas, Bob. Anywhere where trailers blow up as meth labs is a place where all hope of advancing has been lost. Making meth is the ultimate sign of life without value. Hey, there's one. Yeah, we can rhyme ignoramus with asparagus. He's a member of several three. He's a member of the Tea Party Caucus, the International Conservation Caucus. Okay, you got me. I gotta know what the hell that is. The U.S. Congressional International Conservation Caucus, founded September 2003, is a bipartisan congressional organization with the conviction, oh, devoutly to be wished, that the United States of America has the opportunity, the obligation, and the interest to advance the conservation of natural resources for this and future generations. How has he not been drummed out? This guy thinks that global warming is a hoax. Okay, that makes no sense. All actions must be grounded in respect for the sovereignty, cultures, and traditions of the nations in which programs are implemented. And we're not going to let the UN come to Tyler. Now, he's a member of the Tea Party Caucus, the International Conservation Caucus, and the Israel Allies Caucus. Oh, well, thank you, Benedict. We can also rhyme fetus with asparagus, too, if we're in the first district. Snuffleupagus? Oh, that works nicely, Waggy. Okay, so who's going to get to work on the Green Acres theme parody rewrite? But that was the fun part for Attorney General Holder. Today, he had the not-so-fun part, because he ran up against a really, really smart member of Congress. By definition, that means the guy's a Democrat. Who, while everybody else was hollering about the IRS, Steve Cohen of Memphis, Tennessee, a Democrat, decided to take on the Attorney General on a subject that must have caught him a little bit by surprise. But this is a beautiful little audio segment for regarding a topic that probably means a lot to a considerable number of you.
Greatest threats to liberty has been the government taking people's liberty for things that people are in favor of. The Pew Research...
Okay, now let's go back. This is a Democrat using magic Republican words, liberty. Okay. Yeah, work with it.
The greatest threats to liberty has been the government taking people's liberty for things that people are in favor of.
Now, if a Republican was saying this, you'd be thinking, oh, he's talking about guns. Which, of course, hasn't happened, but you know, that never slowed the right wing down anyway.
The Pew Research Group shows that 52% of Americans think marijuana should not be illegal.
Whoa!
And yet there are people in jail, and your Justice Department's continuing to put people in jail for sale and use, on occasion, of marijuana. That's something the American public has finally caught up with. It was a cultural lag, and it's been an injustice for 40 years in this country to take people's liberty for something that was similar to alcohol.
Similar? Representative Cohen, I have respect for you, sir. But there is not even a passing similarity between cannabis and alcohol. There's just not a whole lot of reporting in the daily police blotter of people being taken into custody having wrapped cars around phone poles while under the influence of pot. There just aren't a hell of a lot of domestic violence calls to homes in which one or another of a spousal pair has gotten high and decided to do anything more than eat the last bag of Cheetos. I would submit that, in fact, as compared to alcohol, cannabis is mostly benign. Now, I mean, it might sap your will a little bit, you know. Maybe before you fire up the number, you might be thinking, you know, I'm gonna go kick my neighbor's ass over something. But then shortly after combustion, you're thinking, now why would I do that? But, you know, it's a little golf clap moment for Representative Cohen for actually taking a moment out of a hearing on an issue that I think we are fast finding out is a non-issue, being as how Every so-called liberal group under the sun got the same letter from the IRS all the way down to People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA. And I don't think you can call them partisan by any stretch of the imagination. They see and 501c4 is designed for social welfare organizations, things, organizations working for the common societal good. And they don't like anybody who eats meat. They don't like anybody who eats fur. They don't like anybody who wears fur. They don't like anybody who wears leather. Bless their hearts. I think they would prefer that we all be walking around in polyvinyl chloride, hydrocarbon-based jackets and pants, and you know, straight out of the Jetsons or something. But I'm trying to be fair. They don't have a partisan bone in their body. They just want to protect the bones and the flesh of all the, you know, they're kind of like a sort of secular Jainists for the United States. They don't want to hurt nothing. Honestly, do you remember... Do you remember when President Obama displayed cat-like reflexes and caught a fly and killed it? And PETA had a fit? That wasn't the onion, was it? No. But the IRS imbroglio is quickly beginning to take on a distinctively Benghazi-like feel to it. PETA got investigated. Liberal group after liberal group after liberal group got investigated. A group in Maine that was designed to teach women how to run for office got their 501c4 pulled. Let's remember that no one of the groups that were looked at by the IRS that happened to have the word Tea Party or Dingbat or the Booger Eater or, you know, any of that right-wing tea, not one of them was denied their 501c4 status. I think we know now that so-called liberal groups were subjected to a far higher level of scrutiny. So we've got the House Oversight Committee holding a hearing about the IRS. You know, all you got to do is quit paying your taxes, and the IRS will fold like a house of cards. Remember, that's what the Adam Koresh, Kokesh. Cokehead, whatever, listener said. And Steve Cohen, bless his heart, takes the opportunity to talk about a real issue.
And it's been an injustice for 40 years in this country to take people's liberty for something that was similar to alcohol. You have continued what is allowing the Mexican cartels power and the power to make money, ruin Mexico, hurt our country by having a prohibition in the late 20th and 21st century. We saw it didn't work in this country in the 20s. We remedied it. This is the time to remedy this prohibition. And I would hope you would do so.
Yay! By the way, might I remind you that Representative Cohen is a smart and a compassionate man. And in point of fact, he is a co-sponsor of H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Nice, huh? Because everything he says is true. I think the prohibition has been going on longer, and I think there's been a hell of a lot more people locked up than even perhaps Representative Cohen has access to numbers for. But correct me if I'm wrong, that actually sounds like a member of the House of Representatives actually trying to do the business of the people. Hooray. Just hooray. At some point in time, you would think that the Congress of the United States would take notice of things the American people actually want. And one of those things is the decriminalization of cannabis. A significant majority of Americans are convinced that the U.S. has lost the war, so-called war on drugs. And to be fair, Representative Cohen used that 40-year mark, and that probably references the invention of the war on drugs by New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller, which has ruined, as Representative Cohen notes, untold numbers of lives. Meanwhile, the oppression is still going on. Let's see here. Department of Justice taking action. U.S. Attorney Melinda Haag, H-A-A-G, I'm not being cute, has filed forfeiture actions to seize the real estate of two Bay Area medical marijuana dispensaries that are, as far as anyone can tell, in complete and total compliance with all the laws of the city and the state and the county. They've knocked down the largest dispensary in Berkeley. They've knocked down the dispensary that serves the Mission District of San Francisco. Overzealous U.S. Attorney Haag has also filed against this U.S. dispensary with locations in Oakland and San Jose. Priorities. And yeah, it is true that apparently the government shut down Bitcoin. Now, I've read up on Bitcoin from time to time, and frankly, I have not had time to fully digest everything about it. But The rationale used by the federal government is that Bitcoin is used for buying the drugs and laundering the money. I guess it's, what, Napster for the 21st century? Only with nobody sharing any files except for imaginary online money. Priorities. Focus, even. So that's where we find ourselves at more or less the close of this first hour of Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, of course, it's Conversation Radio, which means that you are welcome to join in to participate. The Skype line is open, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account. Regular old phone number is 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. And you're welcome to join in to participate. In fact, I encourage you to. take a little break, and then hopefully we'll engage in conversation. We are listener-supported, and thanks for all the support tonight. Thank you very much. This is The Horn.
Panama Red, Panama Red. If you're your woman, then it'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Miss Toledo, he comes breezing through town. If your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. The judges don't know when Red's in town. He keeps well hidden underground. Everybody's acting lazy, falling out or hanging round. My woman said, hey Pedro, you're acting crazy like a clown. Nobody feels like working, Panama Red is back in town. Panama Red, Panama Red. He'll steal your woman, then he'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Mescalito, he comes freezing through town. Bet your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. Everybody's looking out for him, cause they know Red satisfies. Little girls like to listen to and sing, tell sweet lies. But when things get too confusing, honey, we're better off in bed. And I'll be searching all the joints in town for Panama Red. Panama Red, Panama Red. If you're your woman, then it'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Mescalito, he comes freezing to town. Bet your woman is up in bed with old Panama Red. Panama Red, Panama Red. He'll steal your woman, then he'll rob your head. Panama Red, Panama Red. On his white horse, Mescalito, he comes freezing to town. Bet your woman is up in bed.
It's Thursday, May 16, 2013.
The average layperson on the street thinks that it's still a 50-50 debate.
Consensus strikes again. 97% of climate scientists say global warming is man-made, but the public thinks it's evenly split.
That is the highest level of CO2 in 3 or 4 million years.
CO2 levels pass 400 parts per million.
2012 was the second most expensive year for weather-related disasters.
You're already paying a disaster tax. Plus, thanks to renewable energy, one town now has too much money.
Why don't I ever have that problem? All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
10,000 scientists, 2,000 journals across the whole planet from at least 70 different countries. That is one hell of a conspiracy.
Shut up, dude. You just said that out loud. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we don't have time to play this whole thing here today, but I'm going to point people to the website, greennews.bradblog.com, to see this hysterical montage of Fox News beating up Tesla Motors as a boondoggle, a waste of government loan money, a disaster. Nobody wants to drive electric cars.
until the news just came out that it's a huge success, that everybody loves this car, Consumer Reports love it, the company is making money hand over fist, and now the very same people on Fox News are saying, yes, Tesla is a great success. They didn't get any government money, did they? I don't think the government had anything to do with it.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yes.
It's a hilarious bit of a hypocrisy whiplash. We'll see if they report on this new study that says 97% of climate scientists say global warming is primarily man-made. But, you know, the public doesn't know that because of the well-funded climate change denial industry, which has succeeded in tricking the public into believing scientists are evenly split.
It's incredible the number of rubes out there who tell me, oh, it's the scientists are undecided.
Exactly. And that is simply not true, according to this new study. Here's John Cook of Queensland University in a Mother Jones interview.
In published climate papers that state a position on human-caused global warming, there's a 97% consensus that humans are causing global warming.
The researchers surveyed nearly 12,000 peer-reviewed papers that have been published since the early 1990s.
That is one hell of a conspiracy.
Yes, it is. And, of course, you and I are in on it. Don't tell anyone.
Meanwhile,
the atmospheric levels of CO2 exceeded 400 parts per million for an entire 24-hour period for the first time in recorded history. That is the highest level of CO2 in 3 or 4 million years.
And I think John Kerry was there for all of them, actually.
He might have been, yes. That was Secretary of State John Kerry at a meeting of the Arctic Council on Wednesday, noting that, for the record, that yes, atmospheric carbon dioxide rose above the daily average of 400 parts per million at the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. That level fluctuates, but NOAA warns it's only a matter of time before CO2 averages stay above 400 parts per million.
And remember, that number was down in the 200s prior to the Industrial Revolution.
Yep. Climate scientist Michael Mann, speaking at a climatedesk.org event this week, warned that the last time CO2 levels were this high for a sustained period of time, sea levels were 60 to 100 feet higher, and
if we continue with business as usual, we will be at 450 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere in a matter of decades, where we start to see some truly dangerous and irreversible changes in the climate.
But don't feel hopeless. He says there's still time to take action.
But there isn't a whole lot of time left if we're going to do that.
We're already seeing weather whiplash and an increase in extreme weather events, as predicted by climate scientists years ago. For example, a ferocious heat wave sent temperatures soaring as high as 108 degrees in the Midwest just 2 weeks after their deepest May snowfall on record. That increase in weather disasters is expensive. 2012 was the second most expensive year for weather disasters in the United States, costing us $139 billion, which the NRDC says is essentially a disaster tax.
It's equal to almost 1% of our total economic output. Private insurers are realizing that betting against the impacts of climate change is a losing bet. So they're leaving the table, which means the American taxpayer has become the insurer of last resort.
And that's because private insurers only pay about 10 to 15% of these costs. Taxpayers make up the rest. Finally, a tiny village in France says it now has too much money, thanks to the revenue from its community-owned wind farm, which is generating more electricity than they can use, so they're selling it back to the national grid at a profit. But the mayor says they'll manage somehow with all that extra money.
Sweet. I gotta open up a wind farm. For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report until we get our own wind farm. Find us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Who's bending down to give me a rainbow? Everyone knows it's
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Five minutes past the hour, hour number two, yes indeed. as Hemingway would say, well and truly underway. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Bill writing in from Helena, Montana. Pot decriminalization being the subject line. I think everybody is ignoring the fabled elephant in the room when it comes to pot. What government agency was responsible for the placement of marijuana on the list of substances that are equivalent to opium and heroin, etc., et al.? Was it an agency of the federal government or the result of legislation? The answer, in my mind, is to remove marijuana from the list and leave it to the states to determine its legal status. Why might you ask? Well, Bill explains. The right-wing whack jobs and accompanying libertarians are always screaming about states' rights. It seems to me that they would or should be at the forefront of that argument. Just a thought. And I think it's a valid thought. Of course, many of you already know the whole history of how it became criminalized. Because, as I think noted on the program by a caller a couple of nights ago, Barry Goldwater said when he was growing up, it just grew like a weed, you know, wherever stuff would grow in the Arizona desert. And nobody thought anything of smoking it. Yeah, okay, smoked a little, big deal. But you have to remember the racist origins of the criminalization of cannabis. Two things happened in the 1930s. Cannabis was criminalized, and the .357 Magnum round of ammunition was invented. What did these... What? Bob? What the hell's that got to do with anything? More than you know. Or maybe you do know. That was rather snide of me, wasn't it? Certainly elitist. But no, there's a connection. Cannabis was criminalized in the 1930s on the threat that Mexicans and persons of dark colored skin would go wild on cannabis and F all our white women's. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the .357 Magnum round of ammunition, which is basically a 30, probably more than you want to know, but still, this will make sense. The .357 Magnum round of ammunition is basically a 38 caliber bullet in a really, really long shell that packed more gunpowder punch than any other piece of ammunition up until that time. It was designed out of fear that ordinary ammunition would not be effective enough in killing black people, who, incidentally, might be all hopped up on the marijuana. True. Absolutely true. Funny how that stuff kind of runs together, isn't it? Jim pointing out weed? Hell, you're more likely to make peace with one's neighbor after a few tokes. Been there. We'll get Jim to explain the stirruped bong, the stirruped electric bong again sometime. It's a delightful story. Clayton, the militant sociologist writing in, is the subject line, talking about the First District of Texas as described by Benedict and Sergi. Right-wingers, guns, and a predominantly black community. What the? Sounds like a shooting ready to happen. And you got a pretty good idea who's going to be... Remember what I just said about the .357 Magnum round? Mm-hmm. And this. Every now and then I get... I feel like it's been a good night when I've done something to advance knowledge, cultural literacy, appreciation of the arts. And Sergi has provided me that moment for this evening. And I'm being serious. Subject line, Green Acres? Question mark. Wow. I'd never heard of this show before. to Wikipedia and the TV Land channel. Unless I miss my guess, Sergi, we'll be able to hear the laughter from here. It's madcap, it's screwball. The lead actor was somebody I really respected as an actor, Eddie Albert. The Gabor sister who played his beautiful but clueless wife. Was that... It wasn't Zsa-Zsa. Was it Ava? But a level of comic timing brilliance comparable in many ways to the most brilliant comic timing executed by the likes of Gracie Allen. It's madcap, it's zany Sergi, and once you've met Ebb and Mr. Haney and Sam and Ralph and the Ziffles and their son Arnold, I don't want to ruin anything for you. You'll never be the same. No, it wasn't Zsa-Zsa, Lottie. I think it was Ava. But no, go forth and giggle, Sergi. You'll be so happy you did. Yeah, okay, thank you, Marty. You are correct, he says. The Gabor sister who played Lisa Douglas was in fact Ava. She died a few years back. Oh my God, she was comically brilliant. My personal favorites are the little scenes where Oliver Wendell Douglas begins talking about the tiny shoots putting their heads out of the ground and the fife and drum music starts playing in the background. Broke the fourth wall. Where's the music coming from? Yeah. Green Acres is the place to be. 12 minutes past the hour. Lines open, 304-658-3333, or on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, and to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Not much, but you were very busy stealing everything I was going to talk about, so...
Oh, damn, sorry.
Hey, that's okay. You hit it right on the nose, where the stuff came from and how it became popular, and...
Yeah, you were the one who mentioned Barry Goldwater the other night.
Yep. Yeah, let's see. And how much of that stuff I saw in the 60s. Hell, my old man was arrested with a pound of that stuff in 46. And people say, well, how did he stay out of jail? Well, my dad's brother worked for the Mediterranean Civic Association that was... up around the area where the clinic is, you know.
Yeah, isn't there a hill there associated?
Yes. And so I got an education into the, how that operated and how it worked. And I wondered what's happened to, for instance, the three-digit numbers racket. What happened to it? Now that the state controls
it. Yeah, now it's a lottery. Well, did you hear Dr. Bill... Dr. Bill occasionally gives out his email address for those who want to contact him with comments about the show, and the email address is waobrien, O-B-R-I-E-N, 906 at gmail.com. The 906, he explained one night, is there not because of it's got any birthday or anything. The 906 is there because that was his father's favorite series of three digits.
Ah.
Growing up in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I worked in knitting factories as a kid's high school age, and, everybody played the three-digit number. That was it was based on the closing stock figure, if I'm not mistaken. The three-digit stock figure at the end of was the winning number, and people, when I learned, a lot of the folks I worked with had these dream books. That if you dreamt about a certain thing, you played a certain number. And it was a rather interesting concept. And but I wonder what happened to it, with the state becoming... I mean,
well, the state put them out of business. And that was one reason for the lottery's existence was, let's And you can make the same argument about cannabis, Bill. Yeah. I mean, legalize it, tax it, bring the revenue, bring the revenue into the light of day.
Yep. Absolutely. And
the mob. The thing is, the mob paid on the straight, and there were no taxes.
Yes. Now, have you seen this thing where they're talking about dropping the DUI to 5%?
Yeah, I did, and this is not because I intend to go out wheeling around loaded or anything, but that seems extremely misbegotten.
Well, I just, it's more money, They said I had a cop follow me into my doctor's office one morning at 11 o'clock, 11:30, and somebody had reported that I was weaving. Well, the road I was driving was one of those Crown Country roads, and I was driving a van, and vans have a tendency in the wind, especially on a road. You know, when I say crowned, I mean it's higher in the middle than it.
Right. Yeah. It's not flat.
Yeah. It's a shed water. And then this
we guy, have those.
Yeah, yeah, you would. Yeah, this guy pulls in behind me and he yells out, "Have you been drinking?" And me being a smart ass, I said, "What are you buying?" And that did not get me into with him. But I was right outside my doctor's office. I said, "Hey, you want to go in and take a blood test right here and now? Let's go." Because I don't think I'd had a drink in. I really laid off of it, Bob. I did plenty when I was a younger guy, and then as I got older, I said, the hell with it, because I didn't feel like giving some local gendarme a big hunk of my money based on...
Yeah, and that hunk has gotten significantly larger in recent years, Bill.
And they can manipulate like crazy. My uncle got nailed one time in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, and... what he did was when he went to court, he said, hey, according to the law, this radar is supposed to be calibrated every day. When was it calibrated the day that you guys hit me with the speeding ticket? It hadn't been, and the ticket was thrown out.
Yeah.
Because they didn't bother to calibrate the radar. Just put it out there.
Well, now, now DUI can be a $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000 affair.
Yeah.
And frankly, we need to... comprehend that the way we handle DUI in the United States is as a function of our ongoing punishment fetish here.
Yeah.
So that, well, you know what? If we handled DUI the way that some civilized European states, and I don't know about how other countries do it, if we handled it like they do, I mean, the story that was told to me, Bill, was by a friend of mine who goes back and forth to Germany quite a bit. And he said, the Germans are less tolerant of driving under the influence than we are. But what they do is they try to impress upon you that you don't ever want to drive under the influence again.
Yeah.
And they do so by making sure you don't get to drive a car. And when you take into account the fact that you can spend $5,000 to $10,000, if I understood correctly when I was over there, you can spend big money just getting your driver's license.
Yeah.
Because it is an educational process, just like, calculus or biology or anything else. And it's not like DUI. It's not like driver's ed here in the United States where the local dealership donates three or four cars and you stick a little yellow hat on top of the car and turn the kid loose to start dodging coal trucks out on US 60. It's much more serious business. So you don't want to lose your driver's license. But right. What happens is you'll lose it for a period of time, and you'll go to school and go to school and go to school, and you will walk. You'll take Shank's mares for quite some time. And generally, the recidivism rate for DUI in a place like Germany is dramatically lower than it is here.
Here, I know. Believe me, I know enough musicians, Bob, that... are still drinking out there. They get a DUI and they work their way through but they don't understand that their plates are kind of marked, and they can be pulled over any time the cops feel like pulling them over. And that's, if you get a second one or third one, look out. You're
and done. So and so this is just going to be a revenue expansion measure.
Yes. It doesn't hurt to bring in more money with it. Let's put it that way, as far as they're concerned.
But I'll bet you if, and this is just based on past experience, if you were to sit down with a law enforcement officer, and we will assume for a moment that you're talking to one who's straight.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like not gay. I mean
no.
Not crooked. And you say, what's it going to mean to you to drop the DUI level, DUI threshold to 0.05? That cop is going to say, that's going to mean I'm going to spend a lot more time doing paperwork, and I'm going to bust a lot more grannies who didn't realize they shouldn't have the second Chardonnay.
Yeah.
With dinner.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. They just can't. People don't realize how much I learned about how much booze is. But my second wife ran a drug and alcoholism counseling center, so I learned an awful lot by being at meetings and listening to experts talk. And that's when I said, "The heck with it!" You know, I don't drink anymore.
Well, I met the lovely Agnes when she was an inebriate recovery counselor.
Ah.
And I did not meet her because I was one of her clients or patients or whatever they were. No, I had another job, and we met one evening when one of the local profound alcoholics, non-functioning, one might say, had been run in for public intoxication.
Mm-hmm.
And her job was to sit there and make sure he didn't do anything stupid.
A friend of mine tried to get a business started whereas you could, it was called dial a designated driver. If you had too many on the road and you could sit down, dial somebody, they would send down a driver and a chase car. The guy in the chase car would drive your car home.
Yeah.
The other guy would drive you home. But where he ran into a lot of trouble and a lot of opposition, he told me, was insurance companies.
Well, because among other things, at that point in time, you're a common carrier.
Yeah.
Which means you're paying basically the same kind of insurance costs as a cab driver. But you know what? That still goes on. In fact, there's a restaurant and pub not too far from the AIC headquarters in D.C. that serves a pretty decent, well, I used to think it was a pretty decent wing. And there was a poster in the men's room there that said, get home safely in your own car, and gave the number. And it was exactly that, a driver for your car and a chase car to get the driver back home. I used to think it was a decent little place for wings until Ferg and I were sitting there one evening. I must admit we got a little tired of beans. And I just looked at him and said, come on, wings. He said, yeah, Dad. And we walked around the corner and we're sitting there eating our wings when a rat the size of a possum ran across the floor in front of Ferg. And
yeah, that'll get you.
Oh, yeah, oh yeah! All the color drained out of his face, and he dropped the wing, and it just went clank on the plate, and he looked at me and said, did you see that? And I tried, Bill.
Yeah.
I said, see what?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, trying to be a
good dad there. No, don't mess with me, Dad. You saw it, didn't you? I said, you mean the rat the size of a possum?
Yeah, I used to, well, the walleye, the shad used to come into the lake, come into around 72nd Street on Lake Erie, and when the temperature hit about 58, maybe, or anyway, and following them would come the walleye. On my wall, I have a picture of a 7-pound walleye that I caught from the shore. That's kind of unusual.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I was throwing a Rapala, countdown Rapala. You stand there and throw them and count them down, and boom, they hit. And this was the biggest walleye I ever caught in my life.
Out of Lake Erie?
Yeah. I mean, 7 pounds plus a little bit, and we're talking how many times I fish from different boats and not get them that big out there. And this was like 3:30 in the morning. I just come from playing a gig. I was driving a camper in those days, and the three or four guys went down there with me, and we're all fishing, and that was one thing you learned after a while, but there's always like you're saying, the rats down by the lake, holy crow. All these gun owners should, they want to have fun, take your damn 22 down there and kill rats, you know. Of course, look out for those shots that are bouncing off of rocks. You better be wearing a protective suit.
Nice.
Well, maybe we could get rid of some morons at the same time. You never know. Anyway, I'll let you go, but that's my story. And you covered so much ground tonight that, you know, I don't have too much to say for a change. And there's plenty of people waiting to talk. Get them on there.
Well, heck, I mean, we're only halfway done with the show. Thanks, Bill. You have a good night.
Good night.
Bye now. Calling from Cleveland, Mr. Stress. That's our buddy Bill. And it really is. It's about 26 minutes past the hour. Lines open if you want to jump in. 304-658-3333 on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And speaking of thorns, how long ago did the WikiLeaks cables get dumped? You know, there was a huge number of them. And most of it was centered on things that were, you know, diplomatically embarrassing to the United States government, things that showed how utterly, completely corrupt and inept the Bush administration had been, yada, yada, yada. Well, drip, drip, drip. They're still out there, and people are still combing through them. And thus, I found this story rather interesting. Now that we're done, this is a story from The Guardian. Now that we're done examining it for the usual political hackery, there's some real substance coming out. American diplomats lobbied aggressively overseas, and I mention this because of the Supreme Court decision that came down a couple of days ago with regard to Monsanto. The Supreme Court holding, and note this, by a unanimous decision to hang a farmer out to dry for planting the wrong seeds. Because he planted Roundup Ready genetically modified Franken soybeans or some such, and Monsanto decided to drop a rock on him. And unanimously, have I mentioned lately, I used to make this argument fairly frequently, that there is no such thing as a liberal court, at least not in the United States. There's no such thing as a liberal judge. Above all, judges will always protect the status quo. And basically, I used to have this theory of what I called the 3M theory of American jurisprudence. Not Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing, but instead the 3M theory of American jurisprudence that says that the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and 1,000,000 purpose of the court system in this country is to protect the money, punish the mean ones, and manage the morons. You'll notice that protect the money is first and foremost in that list. Well, a couple of days ago, the Supreme Court, unanimously, that means that all those liberal justices just said, well, absolutely, I'm in complete agreement with Fat Tony Scalia. I'm in complete agreement with the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. 9-0, they voted to hang an individual farmer out to dry and help set precedent for Monsanto in its relentless crusade against independent American farmers. So that's the home front. And that's creepy as hell all by itself. But from The Guardian, what's the date on this? Yesterday. American diplomats lobbied aggressively overseas to promote genetically modified food crops such as soybeans, an analysis of official cable traffic revealed on Tuesday. The review of more than 900 diplomatic cables by the campaign group Food and Water Watch showed a carefully crafted campaign to break down resistance to GM products, and that doesn't mean General Motors, we're talking about genetically modified frankenfoods, in Europe and other countries, and so help promote the bottom line of big American agricultural businesses like Monsanto. The cables, which first surfaced with the WikiLeaks disclosures 2 years ago, described a series of separate public relations strategies. Remember, these are American diplomats. They're not American PR flacks, or at least they're not supposed to be. Benghazi! The cables, which first surfaced with the WikiLeaks disclosures 2 years ago, described a series of separate public relations strategies unrolled at dozens of press junkets and biotech conferences aimed at convincing scientists, media, industry, farmers, elected officials, and others of the safety and benefits of genetically modified frankenfoods. The report offers a further glimpse of the power of the agricultural and biotech industries in America after the Supreme Court came down on the side of Monsanto in its effort to enforce its patented GM soybeans. The public relations effort unrolled by the State Department, also ventured into legal terrain. According to the report, U.S. officials stationed overseas opposed genetically modified food labeling laws as well as rules blocking the import of genetically modified foods. Are you offended by this? I'm deeply offended by this. The report notes that some of the lobbying effort had direct benefits. About 7% of the cables mentioned specific companies, and 6% mentioned Monsanto. Quote, "This corporate diplomacy was nearly twice as common as diplomatic efforts on food aid." In other words, diplomats spent more time hustling and shucking frankenfoods to people who didn't want them than it did trying to get food itself to people who desperately did want it. Winona Hodder is the ED, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch. She said, "I'm especially concerned to see how much of the cables have to do with changing laws and regulations of many of those countries. Instead of focusing on security and promoting democracy, they are focusing on pressuring foreign governments. In some instances, there was little pretense at hiding that resort to pressure, at least within U.S. government circles. In a 2007 cable released during earlier WikiLeaks disclosures, Craig Stapleton, a friend and former business partner of, come on, oh, Jesus, George W. Bush, advised Washington to draw up a target list in Europe in response to a move by France to ban a variety of GM Monsanto corn. The Bush administration State Department didn't think France had the sovereign right to declare that French people don't have to eat corporate gene-spliced frankencorn. Oh, come on, it's just corn with a gene from a goat stomach in it. What are you all squeamish about? They're French, they eat horse. They eat snails. Yeah, they can eat a little bit of corn that we don't know if it's going to make a baby's arm grow out of their head at some point in time. Why the hell not? Country Team Paris recommends, this is a quote, Country Team Paris recommends that we calibrate a target retaliation list. What? That causes some pain across the EU, since this is a collective responsibility, but that also focuses in part on the worst culprits. Culprits! Stapleton wrote that. You know, the friend and former business partner of George W. Bush. Culprits. People who don't want to eat bizarre, genetically engineered frankenfoods are suddenly culprits. Culprits. I guess we're just lucky that he didn't refer to them as evildoers. The list should be measured rather than vicious. Thanks for that. And must be sustainable over the long term, since we should not expect an early victory. Moving to retaliation will make clear that the current path has real costs to EU interests and could help strengthen European pro-biotech voices. Moving to retaliation will do that. Retaliating against people in sovereign nations simply because they do not wish to be drawn in to the American corporate genetically modified weird food industry. It's 2013. It's the 10th anniversary of the opening of the nightmare, the bloody, toxic nightmare in Iraq. In areas where we use depleted uranium munitions, birth defects are off the charts. But even with that, it wasn't enough. Do you remember the Coalition Provisional Authority's announcement and its stated goals that there, in the land between the rivers, expressed as Mesopotamia in Greek, the place where first arose, or among the first places to arise, the idea of growing food to feed a growing population, where the first wheat, the first barley, the first rye was harvested by people working in the desert or in semi-desert sun, where irrigation was invented, where Ur and Sumer and Babylon arose. The Coalition Provisional Authority announced that Iraqi farmers, in the aftermath of our bloodthirsty assault on the people of that country, would be allowed to plant only American corporate, copyrighted, patented, trademarked, genetically modified, oh, I don't know, wheat with a spliced-in gene from a banana slug. And this email was when? 2007. Right on time. Right on time. Good God. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Yeah, that's definitely not the food porn proportion of the program tonight. No. So there's that. That's another thorn. I'm trying to work with some degree of continuity here, but it may not necessarily work out. Just running through the tabs here. No, we're just going to jump around, I think. Just double checking real quick to make sure. Oh, God, I'm not up for that yet. No. O little something from the Guardian's, since we were at the Guardian, a little something from the Guardian's comment is free site. Texas Betsy sent this to me. It's by David Dennis. And it is well worth thinking about. Because even here, where we try to pay attention to these sorts of things, this has been mentioned only in passing. On 3 September 2005, less than a week after Hurricane Katrina devastated the Gulf Coast, David Dennis writes, I began to understand that America cared little about what was happening in New Orleans. I was an undergraduate at Davidson College in North Carolina at the time, worried out of my mind because my family in Mississippi was still without electricity and friends and family in New Orleans and the Mississippi Gulf Coast were still missing. The images of families stranded on rooftops were trickling in via news outlets, but it was obvious that the response from the government would be slow. But it really hit me on 3 September. I was driving around and noticed all the American flags at half-mast because Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist had died. You remember William Rehnquist, the junkie? The right-wing junkie, the right-wing junkie who was a Nixon appointee, who became Chief Justice after that hateful old bastard Berger went on to his long home, his just reward. At the time, Mr. Dennis continues, the Gulf Coast death toll was rumored to be in the thousands with nobody knowing for sure. But flags stayed at full mast until a Chief Justice died, a junkie Chief Justice, by the way. To me, this was a slap in the face to what was going on in New Orleans and a sign that the city just didn't matter to the overall fabric of the country. And we're fortunate, you know, we've got Kate, who's now out on the front range in Montana, but who spent countless weeks trying to aid in the recovery from Katrina, and she knows those realities. Year after year, he says, I watched the anniversary for Katrina pass while people gathered around flagpoles 2 weeks later to mourn the deaths from 9/11. Both were horrible tragedies, but only one seemed to stay in the nation's consciousness. Years after Katrina, I lived in Evanston, Illinois, and learned about the warm weather massacres in Chicago that happen every spring break or beginning of summer, where dozens of high school kids get shot within matters of hours, and how nobody seemed to care. Living in New Orleans and near Chicago has left me jaded to what America prioritizes or chooses to ignore. So I shouldn't be surprised that the Mother's Day parade shooting has largely been forgotten. On Sunday, shots were fired into a crowd during a parade in the New Orleans 7th Ward. Police said they saw three suspects running from the scene. This is the largest mass shooting in the United States where the shooters were still at large after the crime was committed. Think about that for a minute. From Columbine to Virginia Tech to Fort Hill to Aurora, all the shooters were either killed or apprehended on site. But the person or people responsible for shooting 19 Americans in New Orleans on Mother's Day are still free. So why am I allowed to go outside, he asks. Where's the city quarantine or FBI and Homeland Security presence for this act of terrorism? Because this is an act of domestic terrorism, right? Just because the alleged shooter was wearing a white tee and jeans, does that suddenly make the shooting a gang-related affair? And we all know how irrelevant gang-related shootings are here in America. The Mother's Day shooting is so irrelevant that politicians haven't even bothered to mention it to further their anti-gun agendas. If the shootings aren't even important enough for politicians to spin, then it's truly reached a black hole of irrelevance. Did I mention the shooter is still on the loose? I have? Just checking. Police have released photos and video of one of the suspects, but he's still at large. Now take a moment and imagine a Mother's Day parade in the suburbs of Denver, a neighborhood in Edina, or a plaza in Austin where bullets rain down on civilians and even hit children. I can't help but imagine the around-the-clock news coverage. Oh, Anderson Cooper would be there in lickety-split, wouldn't he? Probably Shepard Smith, too. And I can't help but think it's because most of America can identify with the fear of being bombarded with gunfire while just enjoying a parade in the middle of town. But America can't identify with being at a parade in the inner city where gang violence erupts. The, oh my God, that could happen to me factor isn't present with a story about New Orleans or the Chicago South Side. But no matter where the incident occurred, the victims are still there. Victims like 10-year-old Kennard Allen, whose father was stabbed to death in October, whose 5-year-old cousin was shot to death at Kennard's birthday party last May. Kennard was also shot in the neck that day, his birthday. He was also grazed with a bullet in his cheek at the Mother's Day parade. No matter what part of the country Kennard is from, his story should linger in your heart. But it hasn't, because you haven't heard of him, and you've barely heard anything about what should be considered a national tragedy. Unfortunately, though, I've learned to redefine what constitutes an American tragedy. American tragedies occur where middle America frequents every day: airplanes, business offices, marathons, where there persists a tangible fear that this could happen to any of us. And rightfully so. Deaths and mayhem anywhere are tragic. That should always be the case. The story here is where American tragedies don't occur. American tragedies don't occur on the south side of Chicago or the New Orleans Ninth Ward. They don't occur where inner-city high school kids shoot into school buses or someone shoots at a 10-year-old's birthday party in New Orleans, or Gary, Indiana, or Compton, or Newport News. These are where the forgotten tragedies happen, and the cities are left to persevere on their own. So once again, New Orleans will survive and move on, because really, we've been here before. What's to disagree with? What's not to recognize as an American reality? From time to time, I reference that line from the classic Chinatown. I think it's the last line in the film. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Forget it, America, it's New Orleans. Forget it, America, it's Chicago. If we needed any proof that there really is a segment of the American population that is considered to be disposable, expendable, we've got it in Mr. Dennis's essay at Comment is Free at The Guardian. Because flags weren't lowered to half-mast for the shooting on Mother's Day in New Orleans. And they've never been lowered to half-mast for any number of the shootings that happen day in and day out in Chicago, brought on by firearms purchased by lawful gun owners. A bit of an update coming from Jack in Shreveport. He says, I think they've caught one primary guy and have maybe four others in custody. I don't know how closely the four are connected to the incident, though. Well, this was written a couple of days ago. But the point remains the same. Jack said, I think I just saw that 2 or 3 hours ago. But the truth of it remains. Because America likes to say, well, it was those people. Mr. Dennis is right. If we can put ourselves into a situation where one of these ungodly, blood-sodden horrors occur, we take it seriously, we get upset. It could have been us. But if it's in a place where white America and the for-profit media can't imagine actually spending any time unless they absolutely, really, no kidding, positively had to, well, it's a different challenge. Quote coming in from Marty, what I do for a living might not be very reputable, but I am. In this town, I'm the leper with the most fingers. Point taken, Marty. So, I guess there's a sliding scale of horror in this country, isn't there? Thanks to Texas Betsy for sending that along. I opened the program with a reference to some knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing libertarian Ron Rand Paul following freak who used a racial epithet to sort of wonder if the president was going to be assassinated. It's not an isolated incident. It was in April of this year when a revolting right-wing Republican from Overland Park, Kansas, by the name of Steve Roberts, who is a political figure in that county, or in that state, a member of the Kansas Board of Education. You remember the Kansas Board of Education, the Board of Education that wanted to teach the loving creation by our Lord of the earth in 7 days and call it science, creation science, you know, where we were all created equal, except, of course, for Ham and, well, we know. Yeah, that Kansas Board of Education. This is what happened a month ago at the Kansas State Board of Education meeting. And we'll get to it in a minute. Thought I had it queued up. The ads have a way of sneaking back on you. But here it is. Maybe. Anytime. Like I told you, we've had some, well, I mentioned in the chat room, we've had some buffering going on, and so if you have any problems with the program, my apologies, and it seems still to be an issue. Okay, we'll take a powder on running the actual audio from last month. Bottom line is, he used the racial epithet beginning with the letter N. He's catching some hell because, as difficult as it seems to believe, there are some decent people in the state of Kansas. It was during a discussion of African American history when he used the word, if you can imagine. History standards under consideration should do more to ensure that students learn African American history. That was the criticism that was made. And that's when Steve Roberts, used the word. It would help significantly if we could run that. But here's the thing. Right-wing repig-licking state board of education member Steve Roberts of Overland Park, Kansas, wasn't having any being criticized for using the word. Oh, no. No, not in a million years. He wasn't going to have nothing to do with no political correctness. Because that's what it is whenever you catch a right-winger using those kind of filthy derogatory terms. It's political correctness. Here's the audio.
Question about Dr. King, but I would wholeheartedly agree that somebody like Dr. Drew, who figured out blood types,
yes,
would be an excellent point. Just want to mention this, as you push forward for African-American heritage, you know, push it on the light-skinned kids, too, as much as you can.
I should.
Excuse me. I was going to ask a question out of ignorance, whether this was the actual 50th anniversary of Dr. King's letter from Birmingham jail. And then while a previous speaker was speaking, of course, with Google, I can get the answer. And indeed, this is the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's letter from Birmingham jail. And, these are political positions here, and I would like to create some sort of impression that I'm willing to go against political correctness. So it's my understanding...
Here it comes. Oh, God, here it comes. I want to go against political correctness. That means he's on fire, to use the word.
...understanding that the N-word has been outlawed in New York, that the City Council of New York has outlawed it. There's actually a law in the books. To their credit, I don't think anyone's been prosecuted. But it's not...
To their credit, no one in New York has been prosecuted for using that vile piece of hate speech. Got it?
Now unlawful to say the N-word in New York. And as I call up the letter from Birmingham jail, that N-word, we all know what we're talking about, is in this document twice.
Yeah.
So, what? I guess I really don't have a question as much as an admonition that...
I don't have a question so much as I have an admonition that people ought to be able to... Well, it's a perfectly good word. It's in the dictionary. Dr. King used it twice.
We have to push the frontiers.
Really? Really? Reverting to the use of racial epithets is somehow pushing a frontier in this snail-brained right-winger's mind? Oh, it's charming.
Of political correctness and do what's right. And so...
I feel like I'm watching the fuse burn down in some sort of on some sort of device in a Warner Brothers Roadrunner cartoon, and Wile E. Coyote is snickering madly.
If I were to use it clinically, I would almost...
Clinically? Clinically? Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. There's a clinical use for that word? I'll be dipped. Now, this is a month ago. The clinical use of that word. Do we have the intestinal fortitude to try to find out what the clinical use of that word actually means? I think the clinical use of that word means that anytime that right-wing Repiglick and Steve Roberts of Overland, Kansas, and the Kansas State Board of Education feels the need to just drop one, then it's clinical.
Do a test to see what the effect on Twitter would be. You know, that Roberts guy said nigger at the state.
He had to, didn't he? He had to, because he wanted to do a test on what would be the effect on Twitter.
School board meeting. And he said it as, it's probably the ugliest word in our vocabulary. It's an ugly, repugnant, absolutely horrific word that we should rise above. But I did...
Unless I want to use it clinically.
Get it out there.
I needed to get it out there. He needed to. You got that? He needed to get it out there. Some need. You know, I've got an endocrine disorder. Diabetes, I'm told. And every now and then, I need to eat something in order to keep my blood sugar from falling through the floor. I think Mr. Board Member Roberts and I have a different understanding of the word need. Bless his heart. Well, here's the response of the Reverend Ben Scott, having just had the word dropped on him. Standing there in his clerical collar, being lectured by the pasty-faced, white, doughy Steve Roberts. That really is your name.
I appreciate the opportunity to do that in a politically correct setting.
I appreciate the opportunity to use that word in a politically correct setting.
I wish you luck, sir.
He wishes the head of the Kansas NAACP luck. Luck. He doesn't need any luck. He needs the cooperation of the Kansas Board of Education, which, of course, is firmly in the camp of the notion that Adam and Eve rode a dinosaur to church on Sundays.
Absolutely. Appreciate your comments.
Said Reverend Ben Scott. I appreciate your comments. He later said, I was taken aback, Reverend Scott did. I didn't want to take those comments as a personal attack. I refused to do that. Mr. Roberts felt completely comfortable in the end to say the full offensive word. No one's been able to understand why we had to endure Roberts' monologue on that word. That was the comment of Carolyn Campbell, a Democrat from Topeka. My concern, it was never clear why he mentioned Dr. King in that letter. Well, because he's a right-wing Repiglickin, Ms. Campbell, and he was looking for an excuse to use the word. Because it's fun, it's titillating, it's a little bit thrilling if you're a Republican, and you can say, I use the word in a politically correct setting. So having been called on it, board member Roberts said he stood by his comments 100%. The 100% remark was 2 days ago. I stand by it 100%. I did my best to say the N-word clinically. I'm willing to be considered politically incorrect. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing to be politically incorrect. Jeebus. That's another one of those, hey, look, everybody, it's 2013. We should be past this by now. Moments. But that had all the... I mean, why not use a few more? If you're going to be clinical about it, Steve. Going off the rails. We are going off the rails. By the way, Jack writing in from Shreveport, for the name of any references to Frankenfood, any segments like that, how about porn on the cob? Bill in Montana said, you beat me to the punch, but it was order number 81 of 100 from Vicomte L. Paul Bremer that concerned the Iraqi farmers. The order was issued in 2004 regarding Iraqi farmers having to use Franken seeds. Bill in Helena again. I didn't know you'd left, Bill. I'm kidding. Order 81 of 100, 2004. Operating on the behalf of not so much the Coalition Provisional Authority, but on behalf of Monsanto. Nice. Just nice. So it is about 8 minutes past the hour. And you're, well, jump on in if you want to. You know how to reach the program, 304-658-3333. I'm watching two or three things happen at one time. I'm sorry if I'm a little bit distracted. Like I said, some buffering going on. We had a thunderstorm roll through. I consider ourselves ahead of the game. If, in fact, the connection holds up. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Steve Robertson. Is that an elected position? I mean, I'm just curious. Don't know. Clinical. I mean, he's obviously learned to use some big words and everything. There's no way for the word to be clinical. ticket out of next ticket out of Topeka, right? Yeah. So light up the phones. 50 minutes of conversation left. This is the horn. I was sitting there being flummoxed by the word clinical and the use. I stand behind it 100%. I tried to use it all clinical-like. Did you notice he was outraged over the New York's made it illegal to say that word? No. So I'm striking a blow for freedom and states' rights. But no, really, I sat there utterly flummoxed by the use of the word clinical in that context. And you know, I can always count on the chat room. Waggy writing, I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones, your fetus is at least 1/16th blah, and we know this correlates with an increased chance of premature death. You may want to consider terminating the pregnancy. Eugenics for the 21st century. And I said that there was no clinical usage. And Waggy pointed out, yes, there is, Bob. eugenicists consider race as a clinical condition. Yeah, if I wasn't too lazy to bend that far, I'd just bang my head on the table. Ay, ay, ay. Too much. Much, much, too much. Now, I got this in from Isaac a couple of nights ago. And I want there to be, well, we've been talking a good bit the last few days about police excess. This comes out of Cotati, California. I know nothing about the community. But apparently you don't want to be making too much noise there. I think this was the same night that Sandra and I were having the conversation about the death of the Fourth Amendment. And as if to prove that we were right, Isaac found this. And it's recent. Goes back to May the 14th. Neighbors call in, neighbors call in a noise complaint, and the boys in blue show up. Now, some of the audio is hard to get. The cops show up outside the home. Being citizens aware of their constitutional rights, they begin videotaping, they begin videoing the police as they demanded entry to the home. Four of them, I think. The audio is really, really good from the inside where the camcorder microphone is. You have a hard time hearing the cops outside the window. Still worth the effort.
I'm recording everything that's happening now.
Stop talking, because they're talking about...
So we're going to come inside, just to let you know that. You're going to come
inside? We're going to come inside, just want to let you know that. Not we've got a warrant. No.
Inside?
Without a warrant, sir?
You're going to come inside without a warrant? Probable cause, you're going to kick my door down. There's no domestic...
There's domestic violence.
Violence? There is no domestic violence.
Between two people, I'm right here.
Meanwhile, one cop is standing up against the window glass with his hand on the glass, peering through the glass. Okay.
They're going to arrest you, dude. They're going to fucking shoot us.
How many children are in the house?
There's one child in the house and one is playing outside. Officer, there's one child.
Why are you guys not coming out?
Why are you guys not coming out? America, 2013. Why are you guys not coming out? Well, because this is our home. And we are under no obligation to come out. We're not even under the obligation to answer the door to you unless you present a warrant. At least, that's what the Fourth Amendment says. You might recall in my conversation with Sandra a couple of nights ago, I referenced a U.S. Supreme Court case called U.S. v. Leon. That's the one where the cops were held to have been okay in bashing in a door because they were acting in good faith, even though the warrant was faulty. They had a warrant. No warrant here.
Why are you not coming out? Because we don't live in a police state, sir. Martial law has not been established in this country.
Okay, the martial law bit makes me... But he's right. I mean, granted, it sounds a little Ron Paul-y, but he's right. Why are you not coming out? Why are you standing there with guns? Over, I remind you, a noise complaint.
Okay, can you do us a favor? All get down on your ground. Get down on the ground.
That's a favor. You got that? Can you do us a favor? You all get down on the ground. That's a favor to the police who don't have a warrant.
Put your hands behind your back because we're going to kick the door.
Get down on the ground, put your hands behind your back, we're going to kick the door. We don't have a warrant, but we're going to kick the door.
He can't report if his hands are behind his back. We need documentation of this violation of their civil rights.
And the cop walks away from the window and heads for the entry door. Meanwhile, behind him is another skinhead cop. And really, you know, they do that. Yeah, they just like skinheads. Holding some sort of device. It's hard to tell in the video whether it's a firearm or some other what. This would be, at this point in time, a pretty terrifying situation. The camera pans across. One individual, at least, is standing up with their hands in the air. What you're about to hear is not pleasant. I hope it is not a trigger. But it is certainly evidence of the country, of the status and the state and the nature of the country we live in. You know, the one where we talk about, where the teabaggers talk about, well, we believe in the Declaration of Independence, which says all men are created equal and life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Yeah.
Stay away from the door, sir.
Stay away from the door, sir. Oh, well, good. You know, everything's going to be okay because he called him sir.
He's got his hand up. You're going to kick my door. You kicked my door down. You kicked my door down.
Get on the ground.
You kicked my door down.
Yes, we did. Get on the ground.
No, you have no right to be in here. You have no right to be in here. You have no right to be here. You have no right to be in here. Do not touch her. You are assaulting her.
They tased them so many times that they shorted out the camera. All this because your neighbor dropped the dime on you because you were being too loud. So let's check the tote board. The cops can show up and tase you in your home, knocking your door down, destroying your door over a noise complaint. These individuals were fairly pale-skinned. I think that's why the tasers were out, because you might recall some time back the story of the persons with dark skin who had not a law enforcement individual, but rather a lawful gun owner come out and blow people away because he didn't like the music. Careful about the noise. Remember when John Ashcroft said, "Be careful what you say"? I mean, are these cops on steroids? Was that roid rage? Now, they're standing there inside their homes. They're not outside the home. They're not touching the cops. All three individuals of the home were arrested and then cited for obstruction. This happened on the 10th of May, 2013. How did they obstruct anybody? There's a quite useful Facebook page out there called Police State USA, Land of the Checkpoints.
And the fact of the matter is, we either live in a home, or we either live in a country where the cops have to have a warrant, or we don't. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing these cops are going to get away scot-free. Because they'll argue that they were operating in a good faith fashion based upon a noise complaint. And of course, this isn't the harrowing video of the man being beaten to death by police. That's recently in the news too. A crowd of people took video watching the police beat a man to death. One person said to another, "Good God, call the cops." And another person can be heard to say, "Those are the cops." And after they had beaten the man to death, and an entire crowd of people had watched it happen, the police in turn went around seizing people's cell phones. The ones with video cameras on them. No warrant. Nothing. Oddly enough, when the cell phones were returned, data had been destroyed, eliminated, removed. In framing the Constitution of the United States, the framers went to great pains after it was determined that, and asked Dr. Bill about this, he knows this far better and far more depth than I. But after it was determined that there absolutely would have to be a Bill of Rights or else nobody was going to go along with it, they went to great pains looking back at their own experiences with the British in the Revolution and noting things that ought to be guaranteed as within a bill of personal rights and liberties. One of the two most archaic amendments of the original ten are, of course, the Second Amendment relating to well-regulated militias, the other one being the amendment relating to quartering of troops, because they had a miserable fear and distrust of standing armies. Well, this isn't the quartering of troops, but it's almost close to it, isn't it? They also, having seen the behavior of the British Army knocking in doors for no reason, crafted the Fourth Amendment that refers to being the right to be secure in one's persons, papers, and effects, and that no search would be executed except upon a search warrant issued upon affidavit of probable cause. No threat. Remember, they told the cops they were videoing. The cop cannot plead that he thought it was a gun. And yet, the Tea Party outrage has yet to develop. Okay, thank you, Marty. Cotati is a town, city in Sonoma County near the campus of Sonoma State University, and the recording sounds like someone has dropped a dime on a party they weren't invited to. Jesus. Were they sitting there giggling behind their curtains watching it all go down? Have we become that paranoid level of let's all rat on each other culture similar to that of East Germany with the Stasi, when practically everybody in the entire East German nation was to one degree or another either an informant of or in the employ of the state secret police, the Stasi? Looks and feels a little bit like it, doesn't it? And there will be no redress. And there will be no justice. No. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
No, hell, Bob, they do it all the time. They've been doing it for a long time.
Doesn't make it okay, though, does it?
No, it doesn't. I remember, let's see. It was a while back in the 80s, when I lived in Columbia, and I had this whole busybody neighbor across the street. And so I just gotten out of the shower, and I had this upstairs porch with a fan going. It was in the summer. And so I was just sitting in the director's chair with a towel on. As a matter of fact, the towel may have dropped because nobody was out there but me. And all of a sudden, I was thinking about lighting up a doobie. And I looked up, and there was a policeman right there in my living room as it went on to the veranda upstairs.
And?
He said, "Have you been playing loud music?" And I said, "No, not really." I said, this lady across the street just has a hard on for me, and you know, she just calls the police over here every time she possibly can because of loud music." And the first thing the cop did was fill the amplifier. He said, "Well, it doesn't feel too hot to me." And the music wasn't that loud, but he just came on in there. He's upstairs and through the living room on to where I was.
South Carolina.
Yeah. And she had called the police on me, but she called them one time because she said that I was parading in the nude.
How hard did she have to be looking?
I don't know. She must have had some fine German ocular equipment. But.
And just in the state of South Carolina, what constitutes parading?
Well, as it was presented to me, I was out on the same porch, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And had just gotten out of the shower. And it gets pretty hot and humid in South Carolina, and
that it does.
I was a fan, and I was walking around looking and stuff like that, but I was inside the confines of my own porch, and I wasn't gesticulating at anybody.
Gesticulating.
Cavorting.
Nice word choice, Jim.
Cavorting in the nude. But nonetheless, you know, that was just commonplace.
Now, take a moment, and knowing that it's South Carolina, take a moment and imagine what it had been if the melanin content of your skin had been considerably higher. Yeah. Not pleasant. I mean, you remind me of the story that was told me not too long back about the boys that would get together and watch the DJ put together his music show tapes. And the old lady next door, and this was just in Mount Hope, and the old lady next door using binoculars saw them using a tape recorder and called the Mount Hope Police Department to report that there were Russian spies next door to her. In that case, the cop at least knocked. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, if the cop knocks, you can open the door to him.
Oh, yeah, that's just polite.
And then they say, we want to come in, and you say, I'm afraid you'll have to get a warrant. But even if you don't answer the door, they still don't, absent some sort of exigent circumstances, have the right to blow through. And certainly not to tase unarmed people whose only crime is insisting upon their Fourth Amendment rights and being in possession of a video camera. At no point in time were those individuals obstructing any officers.
Now, where was this? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of the broadcast.
Well, I may be mispronouncing it, but Cotati, California.
Near Sonoma University?
Yeah, that's what Marty said.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, you've got a whole breed of new Centurions out there. It's not a new breed. It's quite an older breed of Centurions that have sort of passed on their search and destroy or search and violate, humor or...
Well, and frankly, when you look at them, they're all buffed up and muscled up. I wonder how many of them could pass a drug screen for steroids.
I doubt it. I mean, you know, that's part of a stock in trade for someone who is... in that line of work. I mean, that's physical fitness and being buffed up or whatever is very important to their ego. And they do have tremendous egos. They really do.
True.
There have been some nice cops that I've dealt with.
Sure.
They're not all like that.
No, but these are the people who ruin it for the ones who are trying to be decent. I know a bunch of decent ones.
Oh, yeah. Hell, I remember one time a friend and I got stopped, and we had been smoking, and it wasn't missing in the hedges, but the car was so filled up with smoke that, he stopped me. My friend was driving, or he stopped us. It was in my car. And when the guy rolled down the window, the cops started coughing. He said, my God, it's sort of like Mr. Taggart in Blazing Saddles when he came up on the campfire,
Nice reference.
And he said, what the hell are you guys doing?
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Mm-hmm. And he looked at me, he said, can you drive any better than he can? And I said, yes, sir. And by that time, I had eaten half the thing, which didn't go down too well. But, I mean, when duty calls, you have to answer the call of necessity.
Yeah, that cherry is not exactly fruit-flavored.
No. And, we went on our merry way and went straight home. I mean, that was enough of a wake-up call for me.
Right. Yeah, he probably just didn't want to fool with the paperwork.
A lot of them have told me that. A lot, policemen I've known have said, it just depends on the cop that you get and who, and what kind of mood he's in, and also whether or not he wants to get off of the shift.
And see, the thing is, in the case of, in the instance that we just played, though, Jim, there's not a cop. There's four of them, at least three, any one of whom could have said, this is not right.
For a noise complaint? That was what the...
Yeah, it was a noise complaint. And then on the outside, we've heard it was domestic violence. Well, even domestic violence doesn't allow you to enter without a warrant.
Well, given the content of TV programs today, with the screaming and all the crap you hear from that, if you have your TV up to a certain extent, it can make you think that somebody walking outside is going to feel like you're committing a murder when it's simply coming out of the TV. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And thin walls, apartment complex. It was pretty obvious this seemed like an apartment complex.
Oh yeah, you've got a lot of people who
they go in with tasers. They've been told that there is one child in the home and one child outside playing. What the hell? But then again, remember, we've got a Supreme Court that has a justice on it, Jim, Sammy Alito, one of whose more famous decisions while still on the Court of Appeals was to uphold a case in which a little girl was strip-searched in an alleged drug raid on premises and not by anyone trained to deal with issues regarding children.
I mean, not even by a matron?
I can't recall that portion of it, but Sammy Alito said, yeah, sure, why not? They were acting in good faith.
What were they looking for?
Drugs. Their rationale presented was that drug dealers in America will often hide their drugs on the persons of little children.
Oh.
And if that's the case, that's fine. The child's not going to be able to do anything with it. Call in the CPS worker. If you have reason to know that there are children in the home, you go with the CPS worker in tow.
No, yeah, they'll do all kinds of things. Body cavity searches, you name it. I mean, you know, it's just amazing what they can do with the bump they get going.
Marty's telling me he thought that was John Roberts. I thought it was Alito, but I could have it. Maybe it's dead-eyed John.
You know, changing the subject here, I sent you an email about ISA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Conflict with Eric Holder yesterday. Did you see that?
You mean where Holder told him his conduct was shameful?
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. If anybody's conduct was shameful, it was ISA.
Well, and that's what Harold Holder told him.
And you know his history. You know he's like a multimillionaire, like $7 million worth.
Yeah, and he's also an unindicted co-conspirator and a what? Fraud merchant, thief.
Car theft.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. And he has another charge he was booked on too, or it may have been dropped. But I mean, this guy is no angel. But I mean, the way he was treating the Attorney General of the United States was just absolutely incredible, and how they were screaming back and forth to the chairman for a point of order and all this kind of shit. I thought to myself, my God, I said, this makes the HUAC hearings of the 1950s look like an Easter pageant.
Yeah.
Just so desperate to find something.
And as noted, Jim, even the IRS thing is beginning to look a little less than straight up.
Like I said the other night, they're throwing things against the wall, and they're going to try to find anything they possibly can to do whatever they possibly can to intimidate the Democrats and Obama or anything that they stand for. I mean, they had a whole crowd out today, and I think it was on MSNBC, and I can't remember who was there, and they were screaming jail, prison, Watergate, and the only one of the whole gaggle, and you're not going to be able to handle this, that made any sense at all was Bachman.
No.
And she grabbed the microphone and she said, well, at least we've got to, you know, go through due process and see what's going on here and investigate properly and without making all these accusations. I mean, even Michelle Bachman had sense enough to overcome her fellow congressman to realize they were making fools of themselves.
But again, as I noted, Jim, I think we should take into account that this is sort of about 2014, but more than that, it's about 2016. and they don't take off years, and they're going to, and they know that they have an electorate that feeds on this stuff like flowers turn toward the sun.
Oh yeah.
I mean, consider the raving paranoiacs who listen to this, Adam Koresh or whatever his name is.
Well, people who listen to this stuff, number one, half of them only listen to a part of what's going on, and they hear the, you know, what they want to hear, and they change the channel. See, I told you so. That's what they're doing. And they don't listen to the complete reportage that's being presented. And of course, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot to set them off. They'll probably pick up the phone and call their friends or whomever and say, did you hear what I heard and this, that, and the other? And no, I didn't hear it. They said that. And then by the time it gets to the fifth or fourth person, you...
See, I told you he was a Muslim, Kenyan.
Basically, or something like that. I mean, it's just incredible how, you know, people are. And people are just like that.
Well, remember, 9% of Republicans who think that Benghazi is in Cuba.
Yeah, I love that.
Or maybe North Korea. Or possibly Iran. Maybe Syria.
Well, they just don't have much of a sense of geography. Like
consider that Louis Gohmert won his last election with a vote tally of 71% in the 1st Congressional District of Texas. Only one of two things can obtain about the 1st Congressional District of Texas. They're either watching Louis Gohmert make an ass of himself and approve of it, or they're too stupid to care. I mean, mercifully, there's 29% who had the common good sense to vote against him, or 27-point-something%. But still. And the same thing applies for Steve King's district, and Michelle Bachmann's district, and Steve Stockton's district in Texas, and on and on, and Paul Brown's district in Georgia, and, who's that? Yeah, he's the... science is lies from the pits of hell guy. And he said that, and his constituents said, yes, amen.
Now, Bachmann's from Minnesota, isn't she?
Yeah. A district comprised largely of a fairly well-to-do area of Minneapolis.
Right. That's really strange that they would send her to Congress.
Not when you consider the way the district is drawn.
Well, that's what I said the other night about, you know, how the Republicans could recover and stuff like that from any type of defeat or whatever. You know, they will redraw and gerrymander a district to the point that they can get whomever they want to elected. And if they can't do it like that, they'll tamper with voting machines and, you know, they'll discourage people from voting who would not vote their way, and you know the tricks. We've talked about them many times on this program before. Their tricks are well known.
And apparently work.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, hooray for Diebold. They'll give you the results, whatever you want. I mean, you know, it's hell. It's more guaranteed than a rigged slot machine in Vegas.
Yep, or a roulette wheel with a brake on it.
There you go. That's it. That's exactly what they consider the electoral process. And it's just really regrettable. I don't know. But anyway, I thought ISA was particularly obnoxious and...
And you know, it's interesting. He's more or less laid low for the last few years when everybody expected him to be out of the gates, you know, snarling with his fangs dripping and all of that stuff. He's played the cards close to his vest, and now he's getting ready to really, really spend the summer taking us to hell. I mean, it's odd. It's odd that out of this congressional year's calendar, the House is in session for more days in June and July than any other months in the year.
I'll tell you another one that's going to give you some trouble. Is that John Micah?
No, please. Yeah.
I can't figure out what that thing is on his head.
You mean, the hairpiece?
I don't know what to call it.
The thing he apparently borrowed from Donald Trump?
I don't know, but I mean, you know, I kept looking at it, but I mean, you know, it looked as though if he were caught out in the middle of the worst hurricane in the world, near a hair would move an inch.
It's welded on.
I guess it must be.
It's like the original G.I. Joes with the painted on hair. Not the ones with the lifelike hair and beard.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, he was on C-SPAN going in a whole bunch of stuff yesterday morning. And I thought to myself, good Lord in heaven, man, what in the world are you talking about? And these people are just, and some of the calls he was getting, you know, were very favorable to what he was saying. And the calls that were negative, he just brushed them off to the point that, you know, the guy who was running the show had to, you know, ring the caller off because he couldn't answer exactly what was going on. But I mean, you have a real, real, confederation of dunces up there.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that scares me, you know, I've been around a lot of dunces in my life.
They'd make Jonathan Swift blush at the very fact that he invented the phrase.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been around a lot of dunces in my life, but most of them were harmless dunces. I didn't hurt anybody but themselves.
Well, what was the quote from Swift? You will know a great man by these presents, that wherever he goes, he will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces.
Mm-hmm.
Mark suggesting that John Micah's hair is comprised of a hockey puck with black mold. I guess the mold adds texture.
Just tell your friend who emails you, said, I ain't never seen no hair that color.
God never made a hair that color.
Just felt like, you know, something out of Gone with the Wind, when Mammy looked at Bill Watling's hair, and you know, and I mean, this thing was so closely cropped. I mean, if you got near that guy, you'd probably get cut if you aimed your head at you. But enough about
like to see him chop an onion with that head.
Oh God, yeah, but I mean, you know, it's just amazing some of the stuff these guys wear and stuff. And what they say is more important than what they wear, or less important. Or I wish it were less important, but I mean, the guy was just mean spirited. He really was. I mean, Micah's not known for his
charitable nature.
No, exactly. He's known. He's basically an asshole.
That word has been used. Yes.
As a matter of fact, I think
but
all
that's,
of them
you know,
are assholes. But when you get a whole bunch of them together, a whole gaggle of those geese together, and the only one who makes any sense out of the whole crowd is Michelle Bachmann.
It's a sad, sad day for America, Jim. So, within those taxonomical boundaries, you know, it's a murder of crows, a gaggle of geese. What is it?
A pride of lions.
Yeah, what is it of assholes?
Of assholes?
Is it a poopy of assholes?
Let me think of assholes. Well, it's just an assembly of assholes. That's all I can call it.
Oh, we can do better, Jim. You're going to have to think on that.
I'm sorry. My brain won't work any better than that. But I mean, when I thought that the very best is they could pull out a whole crowd that was screaming all this stuff. I mean, they were just incensed. I don't know. It's like they were on something. And they had the smell of blood in their nostrils.
Yeah, I keep threatening to write a song parody about her, to the tune of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the woman they call batshit crazy.
Well, you got it, but I mean, you know, they were literally, for me, an ache of assholes.
There you go.
It was just absolutely aching to see that, and then for the only one to make any reasonable sense. And I think it was either Martin Bashir or Chris O'Donnell who made the statement My God, of all the people who are making any sense out of these idiots.
And that one? Yeah.
Is, yeah.
No, that's where the guy on The Witch takes the pint bottle out of his jacket and throws it over his shoulder.
I got you. But, I mean, that was TV viewing this afternoon. I don't know if you caught it or not, but...
No, I was in meetings all day long, so sadly I missed it.
We're going to have to give one for Michelle on that one, I guess. Oh, brother. You know, besides playing Little Richard the horror, okay?
All right. Hey, Jim, you have a good night.
Hey, you too.
Bye now. Calling from either not far from here or, what was it? Providence. No, Provincetown. Yeah, that's Jim. So I got two things working for me tonight as we close up the program. One, as I said earlier, I advanced cultural knowledge with Sergi. He's probably off, immersing himself in the wonderful world of Green Acres now. And two, and it's a little bit disturbing, and I'm trying not to go, I just found out that I've done the entire show, and it makes me feel kind of zen. I've just found out I've done the entire show with this big-ass bee just perched on my left shoulder. Like some sort of apiary parrot. Hope he stays happy until I can walk out the door and shoo him or her out into the night. Please? Okay. So thanks. Thanks for the time you've spent with us tonight, for it is finite and it is precious. Thanks for the kind contributions of support. Henry and Janie, you made the night. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, Texas Betsy, who would be ordinarily in the chat room but is a bit under the weather right now. Hurry on back, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working people I know, the bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.